The image on your bulletin. It also appeared in the email this week and in the slideshow, which you saw earlier before the service. It's a sculpture called Homeless Jesus. Apparently, sometimes also Jesus the Homeless. It's a bronze sculpture by the Canadian sculptor, Timothy Schmaltz, who's based out of St. Jacobs, Ontario. The original sculpture was installed at Regis College in the University of Toronto. Since then, more of these sculptures have been built and appear all over North America and the world. And the last number that I have is from early 2016, when there were some 100 copies of Homeless Jesus on display worldwide. The statue has been described as a visual translation of the Gospel of Matthew passage, in which Jesus says, "As you did it to the least of my brothers, you did it to me." That's that Matthew 25 passage where Jesus talks about who took care of him and who didn't. People ask, "Where were you? I didn't see you." "As you did it to the least of my siblings, you did it to me." Part of the point of the sculpture is that you can't tell right away that it's Jesus. Schmaltz is a Catholic, so you can tell by the stigmata, the marks in his feet, if you look closely. But otherwise, it just looks like someone huddled in blankets, face mostly covered, asleep on a bench. It's provocative. It's a reminder that we need to pay attention. That Jesus is present even in the places we don't expect to see him, in the places we don't look. So one of these sculptures was put up at the Saints Peter and Paul Jesuit Church in downtown Detroit. And Father Tim McCabe there wrote about his experience one morning coming up to the sculpture and at first thinking that it had been defaced. Jesus was covered in cloth, so you couldn't see the sculpture. And there was what looked like garbage around him, but he looked more closely and saw that someone had come and covered Jesus in blankets to keep him warm. And they'd taken bread and broken it and put a piece in his mouth and set the rest nearby on the ground along with a cup of coffee. As Father Tim McCabe wrote, for when he woke up in the morning. And because he couldn't get socks on the feet, they just lay the socks over his feet. And once again, as Father Tim McCabe wrote, much like the bandages would have been laid over him when he was buried. So Father Tim McCabe writes about the care, the compassion of a homeless guest, taking care of this sculpture, this image of Jesus. Homeless Jesus. It's intentionally provocative and intentionally forces us to look, to pay attention, to rethink all of our assumptions. But it's deeply biblical, not just in the Matthew passage that I mentioned, but also in the images all the way through Scripture of our need to care for all people, not based on a notion of their deserving, but based on a recognition of their intrinsic worth as human beings. So our scriptures again and again turn to the importance of reaching out to those who are most vulnerable, the homeless, and in scriptural terms, the widow and orphan, those without the family who can care for them, the stranger, the refugee in the land. There's all sorts of different things that we do as churches. Emily Pollock mentioned the Out of the Cold program and the volunteers with Out of the Cold, and that our Lucy youth group has had their first of 3 times that they've organized to volunteer this year. And next Saturday, our church has organized a team for the Coldest Night of the Year walk, which supports Yonge Street Mission. And moving ahead a little to the action items coming out of what I say today, that's one of them. You might not choose to walk, might be a little bit too much, but you could still support those who are choosing to walk. What else might be an action item as we pay attention to this sculpture, as we recognize the homeless Jesus? In an article excitingly titled Attitudes to and Interventions in Homelessness, Insights from an International Study, that was it's not a very exciting title. Most papers for conferences aren't actually exciting titles, though. Occasionally English papers, they like puns more. This paper is by Graham Tipple and Suzanne Speak of the Global Urban Research Unit from the University of Newcastle upon Tyne. And it was presented at an international conference in Toronto in 2004. And they name 4 categories of justification for negative perceptions of homeless people. The first they give is competitiveness. The idea that economic and business interests with homeless people on the streets outside are seen to reduce the competitiveness of that business. The second is the idea of worth. Governments and their agencies often use language indicative of worthiness for help, or if people deserve the certain kinds of help they might qualify for. Whenever we make arguments about our need to care for people who are experiencing homelessness, we need to be very cautious about how we talk about worth and deserving, because it can become a category for exclusion just as much as it can become a justification for help. The third category is appearance, the image of people who are homeless as scruffy, unkempt, or dirty, which are used to justify street cleaning initiatives. Clean up our neighborhood. I saw this firsthand when I was living in Vancouver in the lead up to the Vancouver Olympics, when they spent time moving those in the downtown east side out to the suburbs, providing shelter for them there for the period of the Olympics to make sure that downtown Vancouver appeared nice to everyone who was coming for the games. And the fourth category they called pity, charity, and compassion. They say religious and philanthropic institutions adopt more sympathetic and positive language, but these can undermine the potential of many homeless people, labeling them as victims and in need of charity. So even as we talk about this as the church, we have to be careful about how we approach it, because the language that we use matters. In fact, the language that we use matters a lot. There's a theory called labeling theory, which suggests that when an individual is negatively labeled, that person will practice their new label and identify in ways that match the new label. So if we label someone as irresponsible, they're more likely to not behave responsibly. If we label someone as criminal, as many homeless people are, without any kind of consideration of whether that applies to the individual, they're more likely to behave in ways considered criminal. And this is dangerous because it's the powerful people in society who are the ones that control the labels that are given. So Geraldine L. Palmer writes about this. By removing people and families from emotionally charged labels, we can then refocus our attention on remedying structural challenges, like a lack of affordable housing, challenges to accessing behavioral and mental health care, and racial inequalities that often make people unable to afford a home. If we pay attention to our labels, we refocus the discussion from the faults of an individual, the often imagined faults or shortcomings of an individual, to the structural challenges that are leading to this larger issue. Now, we know from disability studies the importance of what's called person-first language. This is important within disability studies, for example, talking about someone not as a disabled person, but a person with a disability. Or within certain healthcare discussions, starting with the person first and then the illness, or around mental illness. Once again, looking at the person first, not the illness. When we talk not about the homeless or a homeless person, but a person experiencing homelessness, the conversation changes. We start by looking at a person. A person is not defined by what they are experiencing. And by saying they're experiencing homelessness, we're talking about not a definition, but a condition that can change. There's a lot more that can be said about all of this, but this is our second takeaway. So our first takeaway is action, such as taking part in Out of the Cold, or the Coldest Night of the Year walk, or the different organizations that we support that address housing in our city and in our country. A second takeaway is paying attention to the language we use and the assumptions that it carries. Paying attention to the person first and then the condition afterwards, recognizing that through our work and their work together, that condition can change. You'll notice that we didn't do this with the homeless Jesus. We started by saying homeless. And I think, I haven't talked to the sculptor, but I think this too is intentional. That all of our associations with Jesus are so often not about homelessness that we need to start with the condition first to reset our thinking, to pay attention properly to Jesus and to others. Well, I have a little bit of data on Housing First initiatives. Who's heard of Housing First? Okay, three people, four, I think. Good. You can read about this on the Government of Canada website, which describes Housing First as an evidence-based approach capable of producing measurable results and as an effective tool in solving chronic and episodic homelessness while reducing pressure on other emergency services. In 2017, in July, CBC ran a story called something like Housing First Works, or I think actually Housing First definitely works. They ran a program at that point, had been running in Regina for 1 year, 2016 to 2017. Like the name suggests, you start with housing before trying to address all of the other challenges that someone who is experiencing homelessness might be facing. And at the same time as connecting an individual with housing, they then provide supports in dealing with the other challenges that they are facing. So this program paid approximately $18,000 annually per person. And the trial first year housed 26 people. And they estimated that the savings of the program to the government, primarily to the provincial government, because most of these costs are provincial, was $1.92 million. $1.92 million. Because those who were being housed weren't cycling through jail cells, detox centers, emergency rooms, and hospital beds. All of the ways that we currently support people, in most instances, who are experiencing homelessness are through emergency services, which are the most expensive way that we offer care to people in our communities. So a third takeaway, a third point of action, might be to learn a little bit more about Housing First. This kind of initiative requires ongoing support, although there's clear evidence that this is a good economic choice, not just an important choice that recognizes the dignity and worth of all people, not because of their behavior or their history or their ability, but because of their humanity. I think this is a challenging topic to pay attention to. It can make us feel uncomfortable with what we have. And it can make us feel uncomfortable to have the idea of deserving challenged, the notion that we deserve what we have, being challenged by not allowing this framework to be discussed when we're talking about the misfortune of others. Sometimes we fall into cliches when we talk about those experiencing homelessness and say something like, "There but for the grace of God go I." And I hope you never say that. Or at least I hope you will never say that again. Because whether or not we are experiencing homelessness has nothing to do with God's grace. Has to do with a variety of reasons, often related to a combination of race and class and luck and bad luck and other challenges and experiences that individuals and communities and groups experience during their lives, as well as larger systemic reasons about the way our economics and social systems are created. Homelessness has nothing to do with God's grace. Where we see God's grace is in images like that sculpture, with Jesus sleeping on a bench, asking us to pay attention. Asking us to pay attention, to recognize the good luck and privilege we've had in our lives, and to work towards a place that is a sign of God's grace, where all have enough, where all have a home. That's mostly what I wanted to say, but I have a little aside. because I don't like the term homelessness very much. I tend to talk more about housing than homelessness, because often we equate the idea of some walls and a roof with home. But home is about something different. Home isn't just about shelter and safety, but about connection and belonging. Having a place where you are given worth, where you are recognized as a person with worth, and where you have connection with others, whether it's family or friends or neighbors or those in your community. We can have a house without having a home when we move to a new place, when we lose someone we love, when we experience other kinds of transition. So our last takeaway is to think about that question. What's the difference between a house and a home? And how do we support in our own lives and in the lives of others, not just the creation and support of housing, but the recognition and support of home? We do this knowing that we are not alone. We do this knowing that God's grace reaches all people, that God's love is not conditional and does not have notions of worth, and that we are capable of great things and great change when we work together. Thanks be to God.